Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Joseph Bottom is a professor of cyber ethics and director of the Classics Institute at Dakota State University. He's written an article for The Spectator, and it's called Did the Cyber Revolution Save Sioux Falls? So he's joining us today on the phone to talk about this idea of unintended consequences of digitization in our cities and towns. Dr. Bottom, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
All right, tell me where the seed of this sort of, you know, humble proposition came from.
Well, it is, yeah, humble. It is used with some irony, I realize, Lori. It was kind of a grand idea that I was just thinking about one day when I was driving down from Madison to Sioux Falls, and it occurred to me that the Sioux Falls as it exists now is not the way it was when I was a child. I remember my mother suspecting that the area around the falls was a dangerous area. And Sioux Falls was not a pleasant city. And somehow, of course, it's changed. It really feels vibrant and alive as a, you know, city under 200,000 people could be. And I began to think or ask myself why, and it occurred to me that a reasonable proposition, which would require some testing, is the proposition that the computer revolution is the main difference between the Sioux Falls of the 1970s and the Sioux Falls of the 2010s.
Mm. What's the population now? It's more than 200,000, isn't it?
In the metropolitan area?
Yeah, well, I don't know. We'll have to get that. You have a metropolitan population around 260,000.
Right.
In the article.
But the city proper has 179, I think.
Got it. Okay, there we go. All right, so how would this be? Because, it's, you know, again, you say there'd be more testing to do, but we look at the growth, and then we look at the population decrease of small towns and rural areas in the state. And a lot of those kids are coming to Sioux Falls.
Yeah, I mean, that is the kind of extraordinary thing. You know, in several of the censuses between the 1880s and 1980s, over that 100-year period, South Dakota, North Dakota, West Virginia, these were the only states that in some of those censuses lost population. Every other state in the country grew in every census. And that process is still going on in South Dakota. If you drill down into counties, some of the counties, Hughes County and all these counties in central and western South Dakota, you still see the depopulation of the Buffalo Commons going on. These little towns are dying. The farm towns are dying. The ranches are depopulating. But instead of that resulting in a decline in the population of South Dakota in the 2010 census, we actually had an increase in the population of South Dakota in that census. And if you look, it's because of Sioux Falls, Rapid City to some degree, a handful of other towns that I describe in the article as having a second reason for their existence. But the farm towns are still dying. The computer revolution did not save the farm town or the ranch town or the little county seat. What it did is make it possible for the kids leaving those farm towns and ranch towns to stay in the state by going to Sioux Falls instead. And what you see is that Sioux Falls' growth outpaced the decline of population in the rest of the state. And that's a really interesting change. And it struck me that something has happened that makes the small city livable, both financially and culturally, in a way that it wasn't in the 1970s. And again, the major change that certainly happened concurrently was computerization.
All right. So how do we see that manifested in business, in shopping, working from home? How does it sort of show up in a city like Sioux Falls?
Well, in every way except working from home.
Okay.
Working from home, you know, should have made it possible for the kids to stay in the farm towns.
Right, yeah.
They could have telecommuted. But as I say in the article, the mating impulse is strong. The kids don't want to work from their mom's house. What they want to do is meet other young people.
Yeah. Mom might not want them to work from their house either.
Right, exactly. The mom, too, wants them to meet other young people. And, you know, this is why we through the 1990s, we were promised that telecommuting was really going to take off and become a major paradigm of American business. Yeah. And it did not. Some people do it. you know, it didn't die or anything, but it didn't become the major impact that people thought it was going to be in the heady days of the 1990s when Web 2.0 was new. What we got instead was people beginning to group together in small cities in the Midwest. Now, the really extraordinary thing is that these cities are growing, Lori, even though the Midwest is the least growing part of the United States. But these small cities have outpaced all others. The nearest city, fastest growing city in the northeast of the United States would be State College, Pennsylvania, and it would come 19th on a list of, be 19th after all 18 major small cities in the Midwest growing. And, you know, this, as I say, while the big cities are, you know, far outpacing it, it's really extraordinary to think that we can live now in the small cities of the Midwest in a way that would not have been attractive to the young people prior to the computer revolution.
And now, yet we have those big cities like Detroit who are, you know, bankrupt.
Right. I mean, the big cities have their own problems. But it struck me that, you know, lots of things contributed to this. The arrival of Citibank made it possible for Sioux Falls not so much to depend on the meatpacking industry, which had been its major employer before. And Citibank's, the arrival of Citibank first with its credit card business is only possible once you have the computerization of financial records. Mm. And that begins in the 1980s. And shortly thereafter, early in the 80s, Citibank arrives in Sioux Falls. The box store, the large mart stores, start becoming possible in the late 80s, early 1990s, in part because with places like Walmart and the rest, Costco and the rest of them, these are, on a national scale, these are only possible once you have the computerization of inventory. And they serve a dual purpose for this analysis. One, they attract money to the small city. So we get all these people coming in to shop from, you know, an hour away, an hour and a half away. But, of course, that also takes money out of the farm towns, the small towns. And we get the combination of the continuing decline of the small town surrounding the small Midwestern city and an increase of funds into the city itself, which helps its growth. And this, too, of course, is only possible once you have the computerization of inventory, and we can ascribe it, too, to the computer revolution. And in every one of these situations where you see the change in the small city, you find it happening concurrently with the computer revolution, Lori, and yet also owing something to the computer revolution. And so I put this, what I called a hypothesis, that it was the computer revolution that changed life in the small city.
So you mentioned Sioux Falls in the, you know, the 80s or you know, around that time frame. And, you know, I think a lot of us who lived in Sioux Falls at that time remember, you know, Falls Park was not a place that you went and hung out, especially after dark. And now it's beautifully lit and, you know, the Christmas lights are up and pretty soon they'll be, you know, turned on and people will be driving through every night at dark and getting hot chocolate. That takes a real community effort, too. So you talked to Mayor Paul Tenhanken, and he sort of made this argument that, you know, it has to do with quality of life and you know, the Washington Pavilion and the arts and culture and the restaurant industry and a whole lot of other things. Tell me a little bit about your conversation with him and what he was open to, because he's kind of a tech guy, too.
Yeah, I think, I wouldn't want to put words in his mouth, but my impression was that he was persuaded by this hypothesis. At the same time, he thinks, I think because he is a tech guy, finally. But what he points to are, as you say, these quality of life things. He really is high on culture as a driver. I think much of this owes its origin to an analysis by Richard Florida on the creative class that everyone was much taken with in the late 1990s, early 2000s, the urbanist Richard Florida. And that analysis said, you know, what really changes a place is when you get these young creative types. And they can be in everything from computers to art. But they're all kind of intellectual workers. And you bring them in, and they start to change. They start to demand better coffee shops. They start to demand better amenities. They start to demand public art displays and music. And it, you know, it makes a city grow in this way. Now, Florida has backed off of his thesis. In a book published a couple years ago, he looked at the results in the large cities and said, actually, what it's produced is a great boon to the upper class, and has failed the lower class, or the working class and the lower middle class. But the small city might be a place where you can still see this analysis. But again, I would go back to the idea that computerization makes shopping easier. Online shopping and Amazon, for instance, make the small city livable in a way that it wouldn't have been in the 1980s, 1970s. And so, you know, the kids can build a culture there. The young people can demand these cultural amenities, which then have a snowballing effect, but they can do so only because computerization makes it possible.
Right. So the new building, I don't think you've been to our new studio in Sioux Falls here, but it's a multi-purpose building, and you walk down the hall to check our mail, and there's apartment buildings. And, I mean, you have to step over the boxes of Blue Apron and Stitch Fix and all these places where people are ordering in that particular complex, just tons and tons of new services and goods that are coming right to the door, even as they live right in, within walking distance of just about every amenity in the city of Sioux Falls.
And think, Lori, about South Dakota Public Broadcasting's own move there into Sioux Falls. Why? I mean, it would be a reasonable question. You wouldn't have done it in the 1970s. Now there was politics involved, and, you know, and they trying to make sure that Vermilion and other towns survived. But Sioux Falls just feels more central than it did 40 years ago when the computer revolution began. Sioux Falls feels more successful than it did 40 years ago when the computer revolution began. And Sioux Falls feels more attractive than it did 40 years ago. The opening of your offices there is typical, I think, of what the small cities are doing. They're becoming hubs for an enormous region. We saw this with hospitals, for instance.
So let me stop you there real quick, because I want to ask a follow-up question about that, because in the South Dakota Public Broadcasting model, you know, we did not abandon Vermilion. We expanded into a downtown Rapid City studio and a downtown Sioux Falls studio, increasing that engagement. And you mentioned earlier this notion of you know, people really leaving behind those cities, which we as an organization did not do. In fact, we're in those cities more. But other places really are. So is there a way to sort of take this model and create it to the benefit of other communities, those farm and ranch communities, with...
No,
there isn't. Not at all.
And that's a real problem.
Yeah.
This is why I say in the piece that the unintended consequences of the computer revolution, for both good and for ill, are manifest, and we have to face them squarely. The computer revolution may, in my hypothesis, have saved the small Midwestern cities, which were on the verge of dying after the 60s. But they did not save the farm towns, and the farm towns are still dying. In fact, South Dakota, if you go to the census data and you try and drill down in it, you see that South Dakota towns are dying unless they have what I call in the piece a second reason for their existence.
Right.
So like the university in Vermilion, or the state capital in Pierre, or tourism in Custer, South Dakota. But if they don't, they're like Highmore and Blount and Hoven and these towns that were real places once upon a time and county seats, and now they're reduced to a single active business of a convenience store gas station out on the highway. And I don't see in the current economic models any chance of saving them. For one thing, they're not attractive to the young people. Now, the young people don't have to leave the state anymore. They don't have to go to Chicago or Minneapolis or even Omaha, the larger cities of the Midwest. But they do go to Sioux Falls, Rapid City to some degree. And we're seeing that move out of the smaller towns into the small cities of the Midwest across the whole swath of that column of states. It's happening in North Dakota. That's seeing massive growth in Fargo and Bismarck. We see it in South Dakota with Sioux Falls and Rapid City. We see it in Nebraska with Lincoln and Omaha, which is actually more of a major city. It's true in Manhattan, Kansas. You know, I mean, the stack of Midwestern states, we see this pattern over and over again. And we can celebrate it, as Mayor Ten Hankin does. But I also think, Lori, your worries about the rest of the state, the smaller towns, they're absolutely right. The computer revolution that saved the small city is killing them.
How come Rapid City hasn't had growth that matches the city of Sioux Falls?
It doesn't have as large a population circle around it. Hmm. So that process of the big box store, for instance, that I talked about, in Sioux Falls, through the 1990s, we saw those both bringing real money into Sioux Falls, which helped funnel, you know, help improve its growth, and made possible the kind of things that you like the, you know, reclaiming of the falls and the amenities of the town and its sense of a culture. But of course, it did that by sucking a lot of money out of the surrounding small towns, which thrive best, it turns out, when they become basically bedroom communities for Sioux Falls. Rapid City has certainly seen some of this process, not to the same degree as Sioux Falls, and I think that's because Rapid City has a smaller population circle to draw from. Just a lot more people live in the eastern half of the state than live in the western.
Right. How does 5G and the push for it in places like Sioux Falls and Madison continue or change this conversation? Do we see more of this kind of growth?
You know, Madison is going to do okay because, again, it has a second reason for its existence with Dakota State there. And so Madison feels comfortable. But I think 5G is just going to improve the speed of internet connections. But I don't think we're going to get out of it really universal telecommuting. You know, it's just not going to happen, as I say, because the entry people into the job market don't want it. They want to go where they can meet other young people and get married and have kids and all the things their mothers want for them. But 5G is going to make the computer revolution much more insistent, much more persistent. This is going to make it kind of possible to push everything to us out of the extraordinary speeds that we're going to get out of 5G. Ultimately, that's going to help the people who stay on the farms. You know, there's going to be much more universal access, I think. Although the towers, the communication towers and centers for 5G have to actually be closer together. So it's going to be some interesting changes along the way. But I don't think it changes the financial and economic dynamic that's made the small city of the Midwest thrive while not saving the farm towns.
Right. Can a city create its own second reason for existence? And I'm thinking specifically of Hot Springs and Governor-elect Kristi Noem's proposal to make this American, and you know, she's not the first person, I understand, where the ideas come from, but her declaration that, you know, we're going to make this America's veterans town. Is that how a city like Hot Springs, can you sort of throw down the gauntlet like that and say this is what we're trying to do and then do it and be successful?
Look, I'm in favor of that, Lori, but let's be honest about what this means. That's an attempt to save Hot Springs.
Right. Yeah. But that's what towns want to do. They want to,
and so on.
Yeah. So if you were living in one of those towns and you say, we want to save it, we need a second purpose, and here's what it does, that work? Can that work?
Maybe. I'm not sure you can conjure it. I don't think we're rich enough as a state that we can really afford to pour enough money in hopes of kind of, you know, blue sky, somewhere in the future this is going to pay us back. Governor Janklow tried that with these senior centers that he opened in all these little towns across the state. And it didn't seem to do much down the road for these towns. But I think Governor-elect Noem's sense here is that there is something that needs to be done. You need to find this second reason for these towns. But I don't see it saving Blount. I don't see it saving Hoven. I don't see it saving the small towns here, which have continued their decline. And that's a problem. The computer revolution here isn't to blame too much for the decline of these towns. These are broad macroeconomic tides sweeping across the country over the last 100 years. But they haven't done anything to save them either. And we do see it working its salvic effect in Sioux Falls. Right. Sioux Falls feels dynamic in a way that's really quite extraordinary. So the upside of this proposition that of the changes wrought by the computer revolution is the real improvement of life in the small cities of the Midwest. The downside is, you know, on we go with this process of the depopulation of the Buffalo Common.